You're listening to The Martial Brain, the podcast that explores the intersection between the martial arts, science, critical thinking, skepticism, and that wacky organ that floats inside our skull in a pool of cerebrospinal fluid, making life unpredictably inspiring, infuriating, and sometimes just batshit crazy. I'm Jeff Westfall for The Martial Brain. Taking a stance on martial arts stances. Concepts of structure in stillness and movement. The fact that we evolved to be bipeds mean that we literally have fewer legs to stand on than do, say, quadrupeds, when life throws challenges at our balance. One of those times is when we find ourselves in a fight. This has led many martial arts styles to develop a number of stances. My own opinion of the concept of stances has evolved over time. When you take a stance, you are standing still. You spend very little time standing still in a fight. But, on the other hand, you need some sort of structure and training to maintain balance while also maintaining a state of readiness for whatever the opponent does next or whatever you yourself want to do next. In episode 58 of The Martial Brain, entitled The Mathematics of Not Falling Down, I described in detail the difference between static balance, or balance while standing still, and dynamic balance, or balance while moving. You must develop the ability to maintain both types and flow smoothly from one to the other when fighting. In truth, you must develop an entire continuum of balance that extends from static stances through idling footwork and elusive upper body movement, I'll describe those momentarily, all the way to all-out sprinting speed footwork. I'm not speaking now of using traditional stance training for exercise, which I think is an outstanding idea that fits perfectly with the current old-school fitness trend that includes bodyweight exercises and kettlebells. Rather, I'm speaking about taking a stance during a fight. So, when might you take a stance, a stationary stance, in a fight? A stance occurs when, for some reason, dynamic balance reverts to static balance for a significant length of time. Let's look at other athletic pursuits. In baseball, a defensive player takes a stance when waiting to see if, how, and where the batter will hit the ball. A tennis player takes a stance when waiting to return a serve. Basketball players assume stances when awaiting the result of an opposing player's free throw attempt. The common factor here is that all these athletes are waiting to see what an opponent who also happens to be standing still will do next. Such moments do exist in fighting, but just as in basketball, they usually make up a small fraction of the total elapsed time. One example of this in fighting happens when your opponent takes a stance first and holds it. Now, why would an opponent do this? Well, he may be tired and is trying to conserve energy. If you decide that he is indeed tired, you should press the attack to take advantage of his fatigue. Another reason he might take a stance is that he's trying to draw your attack through what appears to be vulnerability. This is a common tactic from fighters who are skilled at counterattacking. You might elect to take a stance yourself and wait for him to attack first. Or, if you feel confident in your abilities, you may indulge him an attack, or you might feint an attack in order to draw his counterattack and counter it. In fencing, this last is called counter time. Whoa! Fighting can be such a chess game. Your opponent may also take a stance for no other reason than that he has been taught to fight this way and knows no other way to fight. In every case, a stance provides some sort of structure. Let's discuss what you want and don't want from your structure. First is orientation. Stand on both feet in any stance you like. Draw an imaginary line that connects the center of each foot to the other. Now extend that line off into infinity. Don't be scared. Part of being a martial artist is mastering time and space. Where that line points in relation to the opponent is the orientation of your stance. Striking styles that use more linear strikes, like straight punches and side kicks, which is the majority of striking styles in my experience, will tend to orient their stance so that the line points at an angle a bit off of directly at the opponent. Some even orient the stance directly at the opponent, especially if they make heavy use of front leg kicking. Other striking styles, one example is Muay Thai, base their game more on curved strikes, specifically the round kick in the case of Muay Thai. For curved striking, a more squared-up stance is in order. This means that the orientation line will now point well to the left of the opponent for a right-handed fighter. In the clinch, at least in Muay Thai as I was taught, the default stance is completely square to the opponent. Another important consideration in any stance is a second line that is perpendicular to the orientation line. This line is the dead angle line. The dead angle is the direction in which you have the least ability to resist pressure or impact. Imagine you are standing square to me in a widely straddled stance, like a traditional horse stance. No matter how solid you think your stance to be, it's child's play for me to take a stance on your dead angle, place the tip of my index finger on your sternum, and push, using only the finger, and force you to take a step back to keep from falling. The same trick would be possible if I stood behind you on the dead angle. It's important to be aware of your dead angle and where your opponent's dead angle is as well. As I said earlier, in the Muay Thai clinch, you stand square to the opponent most of the time. Doesn't that put each of you on the other's dead angle? Yes, it does. But the fact that you are attached to the opponent changes everything. Another important aspect of a stance is its size. The biggest contributing factor to the size of a stance is the distance between your feet. Another factor is which way your feet point in relation to each other. All factors being equal, the bigger the stance, the more stable the stance, but the less mobile the stance. Stability is important for receiving impact and pressure without losing balance, and also for delivering impact and pressure without losing balance. Mobility is important if you need to pursue or evade. So a good stance is nearly always a compromise between the two considerations of stability and mobility. Another important consideration is protecting your legs from attack. If you balance on one leg and painstakingly reach out along the floor with the toe of the other foot with no weight on it, as far as you can, that distance determines the maximum size of a stance from which you can quickly lift one leg off the ground to defend against a kick or tackle attempt. Any wider stance than that, and you are easy meat for a skilled low kicker. Another disadvantage of a stance that is too large is that it's impossible in such a stance to pivot on the ball of one foot, which is required for power punching and other upper body movements. Moving along the continuum away from stances into footwork, there exist other methods for maintaining a state of readiness in the same way that a stance does, following the same rules of orientation and observation of the dead angle as described above, but without standing still. These are types of footwork that, while they use movement, essentially stay in the same place and the same state of readiness, like a stance. One example is what Bruce Lee called the rocker shuffle. This is a motion that moves the fighter back and forth, or even side to side, in roughly 6-inch bouncing steps. Now, why would you expend energy like this when you are essentially moving nowhere? One reason some fighters do this instead of simply standing still is that it allows them to establish a baseline rhythm, which they can play off of with their other movements. They feel that they both react to the opponent's tactics and initiate their own attacks better from rhythmic movement than from stillness. This can also allow the fighter to use the established rhythm as a base to employ broken rhythm for greater deception in attack. Bruce Lee illustrated this tactic in his now famous fight scene with Chuck Norris in the film Return of the Dragon. He starts the fight scene using more traditional stances and footwork, but doesn't fare as well as he would like. He then changes tactics and begins to use the rocker shuffle as a basis for broken timing on the attack. I like to call this kind of footwork idling footwork. When you stop your car at a red light, you leave the engine running. You don't turn it off. You sit with the engine idling until the light turns green. Other forms of idling footwork include the Ali shuffle, The Pendulum Shuffle from Junfan Gong Fu, the rhythmic in-place stepping of Muay Thai, and the Jinga of Capoeira. Similar to idling footwork, in that you move but don't really travel anywhere, is elusive upper body movement. These are shifts and oscillations of your upper body that make your head a difficult target to hit. This is similar to, but not the same as, head movement in reaction to an attack. Instead, it is a pattern of head movement, ideally not a predictable one, that prevents your head from being a stationary target, without moving so violently that you can't keep a visual fix on the opponent. In one sense, this is the opposite of idling footwork, in that your lower body stays mostly still while your upper body moves. When executing any of these tactics, you will maintain structure. You will work hard, despite and throughout all your movement, to keep a base under your center, to not let your feet get too far apart or too close together or crossed against each other, and to maintain a coiled readiness to evade or fire attacks at all times. Structure will help to both generate force and to receive force. When Bruce Lee wrote about the fighting stance he preferred, he gave it the awkward but accurate name, small, phasic, bent knee stance. How's that for a mouthful? Small, to emphasize that if your stance is large like some traditional stances, your movement will suffer and you will be vulnerable to low kicking attacks. Phasic, meaning that you are always moving rather than locked into a pose like a statue. And bent knee, because of the state of readiness it creates for explosive athletic motion. This word phasic could apply to idling footwork and elusive upper body movement. Trying to nail down a ready position for fighting into a statue-like representation is like showing a photograph of a candle flame to someone who has never seen fire. The still picture can never convey the fact that the flame, though emanating from a stationary wick, is always able to move and flicker in response to air currents. So, all of these methods, static stances, standing in place with elusive upper body movement, and idling footwork, are different ways to do the same thing. Preserve structure while maintaining a state of readiness for combat. Anyway, that's what I think. But I could be wrong. Let me know what you think at my website, rpmartialarts.com. I'm Jeff Westfall for the Martial Brain. The Martial Brain is produced by Raging Squirrel Productions in association with the Rising Phoenix Martial Arts Academy. If you like the podcast and would like to help it grow, go to iTunes or Stitcher and give it an honest rating and review. Contact me with questions about the Martial Brain or the Rising Phoenix Academy at our website, rpmartialarts.com.